All right, you're back in the DFSR here talking a little NASCAR action for the upcoming weekend. I'm Doug Norrie, and that is
Chris Terrell.
Yep, and we are going to break that. Well, it's mostly going to be, I'm going to be honest here, it's mostly going to be Chris breaking down NASCAR, because I'm going to be, if you've listened to our NASCAR podcast in the past, which we've done a couple, you know that I'm coming at NASCAR as a complete and utter noob, and looking to Chris just to kind of get me started in terms of, and just really get us all started in terms of what to look at when it comes to NASCAR lineups and how to, well, you know, what kind of relevant stuff.
Sorry, I'm just going to jump in there. Yeah, that's good, because I've been doing solos for the last couple weeks, and I kind of fly through it. So having someone that maybe is a bit of a noob is great in the podcast, I think, just to, you know, you're asking the right questions that a lot of people that are new to DFS NASCAR are going to ask. So I think it's perfect. I'm glad you're back.
And I will say that I have not watched a NASCAR race. I'm just going to be perfectly honest here. I've not watched a NASCAR race in time that I couldn't even calculate, because I honestly couldn't remember. But I did tune in to the Daytona 500, because while we're a couple weeks out of that, I was tuning in to see if I was able to catch a glimpse of you on camera while you were there in Daytona and enjoying all the sights and sounds of the race while, as you know, a member of the media. I know we're a couple weeks out, but we haven't, I mean, you and I have talked, but we haven't really thrown out a podcast since then where I've asked you. I know you've done some other stuff up on the site, but you know, you want to give a quick 30-second, 1-minute kind of take on your experience there in Daytona, because being able to go to experiences like that, whatever kind of sports fan you are, you have to understand that it's like not necessarily a once-in-a-lifetime thing, because you are going to be able to do these things from now going forward as part of the media. But you want to, you know, what was it like down there in Daytona?
It was an amazing experience. First of all, going to any NASCAR race is awesome. I went to one, it would be 7 years ago now in Vegas, but this was just a whole other ballgame. This is like the Super Bowl of NASCAR to kick off the year in Daytona. So just pulling into the place was amazing to see how big it was. But then, the first day we were there was media day. So being able to, you know, bump shoulders and talk to drivers all day, interview. I interviewed Austin Dillon, and he won the race, so that was pretty cool. He was my very first interview. He won the Daytona 500, so that was good. Interviewed Kevin Harvick. He's won 3 races in a row, so the guys that I've interviewed so far, they're 4-for-4 and winning races this year, so I think I'm kind of a little bit of a good luck charm. But yeah, I got to meet a lot of people, both, you know, drivers, crew chiefs, stuff like that. Spent a lot of time in the pits just kind of analyzing how things get done and seeing up close and personal how things get done, and then just shaking hands and kissing babies kind of thing, walking around, just meeting people coming up through the ranks. They're going to be in the Truck Series down the road, in Xfinity Series, and talking to them about fantasy as well. They both play as well, so good connections, definitely.
Yeah, really interesting, really cool stuff. I did not see you on camera, though. I did watch a majority of the race and was able to seem like the expert to my daughter when she was asking about it. So I was able to seem like a NASCAR expert to at least someone in the house when she was asking what this does. And I was, you know, I did the simple stuff like, oh, look at them changing the tires and look at them driving around on the track and look how fast they're going. I was like trying to explain to her. I was like, that would, you know, this is 5 times as fast as we drive up the parkway. Anyway, we're going to talk of what we have a pretty big weekend here in NASCAR with races on both Saturday and Sunday. The bigger of the two races being obviously on Sunday, the Auto Club 400, but we have the two different series. I don't know if, you know, in terms of just a quick explanation, you want to just explain real quick to the people that might be new to this about why there are two races and, you know, what is the difference between what's happening on Saturday? I think you said it's the Roseanne 400 or something like that, based on the reboot of the old television show. And then we have the Auto Club 400. Give us a quick, brief explanation of why the two races and what kind of driver would be in each, and if there is any overlap between them.
Yeah, so NASCAR's got three major series. You got the Truck Series, you got the Xfinity Series, and you got the Monster Energy Cup Series. The Cup Series has had DFS for, I believe this is year three or four now. The Xfinity Series is a little bit lower series. It's kind of like the drivers come through the ranks. They start in the Truck Series pretty young, usually like 18, 19 years old, and then they move up into Xfinity Series, which is into the cars. And the difference between your Xfinity car and your Cup Series car, you know, they look the same, but a little bit different when it comes to horsepower, a lot less horsepower, so they're not going to be going quite as fast. Now, the only difference is a lot of people compare it to, say, Major League Baseball and then AAA, having your minor leagues. It's sort of like that, but drivers in the Monster Energy Cup Series, which is the top series, are allowed to come down and drive four teams in the Xfinity Series. Sometimes those owners of the Cup teams own teams down in the Xfinity Series, so that's kind of where that comes from. They were limited down to 10 races throughout the season, so usually early in the year you're going to see a lot of the Cup drivers in these races, especially when you've got the race in the same city, the same track on the weekend. This week there's only two. Last week I think there was four drivers from the Cup Series down. So it's pretty much the drivers you're going to see in the Xfinity Series. Eventually you're probably going to see most of them come up into the Cup Series.
Interesting. So yeah, so we have lineups you can put together for both days, Saturday and Sunday. And like I said, obviously Sunday is the bigger of the two races, probably with even your layman's attitude toward NASCAR like mine is, where you will clearly recognize more of the names racing on Sunday than we'll be racing on Saturday. But we can take a look at what we're looking at for this week. You know, you can kind of break down some of your thoughts of, you know, when you put together some of your analytics, looking at what drivers stand out, what are some things to look for. I guess we can start with the Xfinity Series for Saturday. What are some of the stuff that you are kind of trying to pinpoint for, you know, what drivers might stand out, the way the track's laid out? What are some of your thoughts there for Saturday?
Yeah, so first of all, the race this weekend, both series, is in Fontana, California at Auto Club Speedway. It's a 2-mile intermediate track. So last week was a 1-mile, this week's a 2-mile. The kind of the similarity between the two tracks is just the flat banking. There's 14 degrees of banking this week, so it's a little bit of a flat track. It's a very wide 2-mile track. You're going to see a lot of passing. There's only two 2-mile tracks on the circuit, so Michigan being the other. Michigan gets two races. Fontana here at Auto Club Speedway, they get one race from 2011. They used to have two races from 2004 to 2010. They've now just got one. And for the Xfinity Series, like I said, there's only two Cup drivers in the series this week. There's a bit of a surprise. Joey Logano's your top driver at 11,200, which the big surprise is Kyle Busch was in there the last 2 weeks. And I mean, he's a little bit better when it comes to the Xfinity Series. He's got all the wins throughout his career and stuff like that. But he's been around $15,000 on DraftKings the last 2 weeks. So seeing Joey Logano as the top Cup driver is pretty amazing value drop. You know, about $3,000, $3,500 drop from the last 2 weeks of the top Cup driver in the series. And in three races here over the last 6 years, Logano, he's raced here three times. He's finished top five with a win as well and led 258 laps. So, you know, before seeing any practice and qualifying, I think he's the top guy that everyone's going to be targeting. And in, like, cash games, you're going to see him probably in the 70 to 80% range and probably in the 50, 60% for sure when it comes to GPPs. And a little bit different from last week. There's not as many laps. I think it's actually the Roseanne 300. So what 150 laps. So there's a few less laps this week. So I think here at Fontana, when we're talking about both series, I think you can go with a little more balanced approach of dominator points, which is your laps led and fast laps, and then your place differential, where you start versus where you finish. You get 1 point for that. So I think we can kind of bring those a little bit closer together this week when looking at a strategy. So, you know, when you're looking at the top Xfinity driver this week, it's going to be Elliott Sadler. You know, if you're fading Logano, you're going to want to go with Sadler. It's going to be hard to fit both of them over 10K, just because in the Xfinity Series, the difference between your top cars and your bottom cars, there's 40 on the track. So I would say, you know, like your top 15 cars and then your bottom 25 cars, there's a huge difference. So finding those low-end punt guys to fit two top-end guys is very tough. There's starting parks, and what that means is, you know, guys that just go out to get their sponsorship, they do 5, 10, 15 laps and they just pull off the track so they don't wreck their car kind of thing. So,
oh, that's interesting. So, wait, so, there, those so guys. There's guys that will just do, so this is, that's a new thing for me that I never even realized. And apologies if you're a NASCAR fan and you're listening to this and you're wading through my lack of knowledge about the sport. But so there's guys that will just do it. There's guys that, now, are you aware of who those racers are ahead of time, or is it something you kind of find out as the race goes on when they are just doing, you know, look, it sounds like they're trying to meet some kind of minimum requirement and then they're pull off. Are we aware of who those drivers are ahead of time, or is that something you kind of pick up on as the race goes on?
Yeah, there's usually like two or three that you're kind of aware of ahead of time. Just so you got to really watch, because some drivers change teams and drive different cars week to week. But so I kind of pay attention to like the car numbers. Like for instance, the 93 car with JJ Yeley, he raced last week the full race because he was in his hometown there in Phoenix, Arizona. But the week before that, he was a start and park. Morgan Shepherd in the 89 car, he's going to be a start and park pretty much every week of the season. I got to watch out for Jeff Green in the 38 car. The Ryan Sieg Racing team, I believe they've got three cars. So usually two of those cars are going to be, which are the 38 and the 93, going to be start and park. But I really just try and watch, especially during like practices, and just see how many laps they're out there running. You know, so if they're practicing, they're running 10 to 20 lap runs on most of these tracks, you're pretty safe that they're going to be in the race and going for it the whole time. But it makes it a little bit trickier when it comes to Xfinity Series for sure.
Interesting. So what other kind of stuff, because I wanted to ask you this too, is when you're looking at practices and qualifying times and whatnot, what are you specifically looking for? Because it seems like this is a big, you know, in terms of research, this does seem like one of the bigger pieces of information, and it's not just one piece of information. This seems like where information can be gleaned, you know, besides what you just said about the start and park. What other stuff can we look for in practice rounds that might be helpful when it comes to actually putting together lineups for Saturday or Sunday?
For sure. So on my cheat sheets I do each week, both for Xfinity and Cup Series, the first thing I do once I get all the data loaded into the sheet is I'll go and I'll look at the track history current. So like the last 2-3 years, how a driver's done there. I'll weigh that, and then a little bit less weight on career track history, especially in the Xfinity Series, just because drivers come and go so often. There's a lot of new drivers coming in. And then track type history. So for this week, I'm looking at Fontana and Michigan, the 2 2-mile tracks out there. And then current form's a big one to see how a driver's been doing during the season. So that's where I come up with my initial model. And then, of course, like on Friday's the big 2 practices for the Xfinity Series. So when I get that data entered, I'm not only just looking at, like when you see your ranks, you go to say NASCAR.com and you're following along and you see that say Joey Logano's number one, Elliott Sather's number two in practice. Those are your single lap runs. So that's their fastest lap. So their fastest lap is ranked first among everyone else's fastest laps. After practice is over, you can get the 10 lap average. Sometimes on these 2 and 2.5 mile tracks, the longer tracks, you're not going to get a lot of the 10 lap averages. But on most weeks where you're going to be on say 1.5 miles or a 1 mile track, you can have 10 lap averages. So that's any 10 lap run that a driver's out there takes the average of his speed over that 10 lap run. And that kind of gives you an indication of how a driver's going to be on the long run. So if it's a long green flag, no crashes, they're out there racing, that's going to give you more of a better feel of who's got the better car when it comes to the long run. So that's something that I really weigh as well. And like I said, this is a 2 mile track this weekend, so I'm not sure how much of that 10 lap data we're actually going to get. You get a lot more when it comes to the Cup Series, I think, but NASCAR has reduced some of the practice times this season, so you know, going through that information is important, definitely important when it comes to the Cup Series. And for the Cup
Let's talk about the Cup Series then, because that seems like it's going to be the bigger race of the weekend. You say you do get more information for the mm-hmm. Cup Series just from the practices. Do you find that is, are we still looking for the same stuff? Or let's take a look at what this Cup Series race is too. Because it's different than the Xfinity. It's clearly a different track. Do you want to get? I mean, we can talk about practice stuff here first, or do we want to talk about just like what the overall makeup of the track is?
Yeah, even some of the questions that I asked in Daytona, that I asked the drivers when it came to actual fantasy questions, was me personally in my model, I don't like the way NASCAR is usually set up every weekend is they have practice one on Friday afternoon. So we're going to see that at like, I believe it's like 2 o'clock Eastern today. And then tonight around, I believe it's 7:15 Eastern, they have qualifying. So my question to them was, and then Saturday we get 2 more practices. They call those the final practices. Used to be happy hour was called the last practice. So practice one, I pretty much don't even weigh that at all, because what drivers are doing and teams are doing is setting up their car to get one really quick run in qualifying so they can qualify up front. So that's not really how their car is going to be set up for the race. So that was some of the questions that I asked the drivers when I did my interviews on Media Day at Daytona, was, am I right in thinking that practice one maybe isn't as important for you guys as a team when it comes to the actual race, and you guys look at just setting up your car for qualifying, and then going into Saturday when you're doing practice two and practice three, those are the really important practices for getting the car ready for the actual race? And the answer was unanimously yes. You're dead on when looking at that information that way. So that's kind of the way I do. So when you're looking at my sheets, you're never going to see any weight on practice one, but practice two, practice, final practice, and then the 10 lap averages for those 2 practices, you're going to see a lot of weight on those, and a lot of weight off of say track history and career track history, and I'm going to take a lot of weight off that once we get that data in. And then looking at place differential, which is big, looking for that value, I look at guys that maybe qualify back in the field, say 20th to 35th to 37th, but were fast in practice. And I've also got a weight for that qualifying practice differential on the sheet. So you can really tell which drivers are fast but qualified back. So that gives them some value when looking for that place differential. Like last week, for instance, we had Brad Keselowski. He qualified in 25th place, but he was showing, say, top 10, top 15 speed. So that's, you know, kind of like a minus, I think it was a minus 10 or a minus 9 on my sheet. And that's, you want the lower number, obviously. So the minus 9 or minus 10 kind of showed you that he's going to be a good place differential play. And he ended up finishing 15th, so he picked up 10 place differential points there. So, but again, back to the race here this weekend. Like I mentioned, from a fantasy standpoint, you can go a little bit more balanced with your dominator and place differential values. Like on the mile and a half tracks, you're looking for dominators, guys that are going to lead laps and get lots of fast laps. This week, only twice in the last six races here, which is, there's only one per year, so the last 6 years, there's only been, only twice has there been more than one driver to lead more than 50 laps. And in those same six races, there's been at least six drivers to gain double-digit place differentials. So that's kind of the data that I look at. It's on the sheet as well in a separate tab. I go through the last six races every week. So that's where I kind of decided that I can go a little more balanced, that you maybe only get one driver to lead over 50 laps, maybe two, and then not likely you're going to get a driver lead over 100 laps, but it does happen. It happened last year. Kyle Larson dominated and led, I think it was 128 laps last year. So that's where I look at from a strategy standpoint this week.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense in terms of, like, you know, how the track would play out in different scoring. And, you know, if you're new to NASCAR too, it could be easy to say, it's like, oh, well, I'm just going to pick, if I could just pick the guy who wins the race, I mean, which is obviously important,
right,
and maybe even necessary, but it's all these other little pieces that need to fall into place for you as well. Like, how much are you going to pick up over the course of the race? So does the track favor someone being able to come from behind? Stop me if I'm wrong about, you
you're
know,
dead
cleaning
on
some of the same, like, you know, does the track favor the ability for drivers who start farther back, the ability to just gain some of those places? And, you know, it's clear. I mean, just even if you just do simple driving, you know, that the you know, driving on a city street is different than driving on a highway, right? And
yep.
So if you are, and again, I'm not, I really want to apologize to people that understand NASCAR way better than I do, because I'm not, this is not who I'm speaking to. But, you know, if you work under the assumption that not every driving condition is the same, then you have to understand that not all drivers are going to be the same either, right? So the taxi driver is going to be bigger, better than in this one situation than another, if you're looking at just like real world examples. So that makes total sense to me. So when you're looking at this week, you know, you said you're going for a balanced approach. I do know that there's been one driver that's been, seems like he's been particularly dominant of late, and that's Kevin Harvick. And I'm knowing that because I'm just looking at some of your notes here. I mean, when you look at a guy like Harvick, how much are you using recent form to influence what you think about him coming in to this race? Because, like, I mean, he's won what, two or three of the last, he's won two races in a row, three races in
three
a row,
three races
like
in
that?
A row, and there's only been four races, so
right, which seems kind of insane to me. So I mean, if we're looking at a run like this, is this a time that we want to buy on maybe like a peak performance for a guy, and is this something that's sustainable? Do these other races that he's won lend themselves to what's happening in the Auto Club 400 this week? What are your thoughts here on Harvick, and then maybe we can roll through some other drivers that you see as standing out for you as you enter Sunday?
Yeah, the Fords have been awesome this year, especially he races for Stuart Haas Racing. This is their second year in a Ford. So they struggled early on last year in the Fords, you know, changing manufacturers. But this year, like I said, he's been absolutely dominant. He's won three straight races and three of the four races this year. I think we can definitely jump on him again this week. His price only went up $100. I was kind of expecting him going to be, you know, 11.9 or even over 12,000 this week, just how dominant he's been and the Fords overall. But he only went up $100. So I think definitely looking at him early here. We're going to have to see, you know, how the practice and qualifying turns out. But he is a California boy. He raced last night in the K&N series, which is the lower series. So he's trying to, you know, help bring fans out and get more fans into the series. So that was good to see. But he's also been good here. He's got one career win, and he finished 13th last year. And like I said, they struggled a bit early in the year with, you know, changing over to Ford. But the 2 years prior to that with Stuart Haas Racing, he finished runner-up, and he's led 176 laps. So, I mean, there's nothing to say. There's no data really pointing out to say, oh, maybe this is the week that Harvick's going to, you know, fade away, and this may be the week that we maybe shouldn't play him, and he may have a, you know, a bad week. everything's still pointing to him being dominant and one of the best cars of the week, and especially when his price only goes up $100, he's definitely one of my top targets, you know, before we see qualifying and practice data.
Yeah, and clearly, I mean, that's all going to be so important. We record this on Friday before some of that data has come out, so there are going to be pieces of information that we simply just don't have right now. I think you make a good point about Harvick, and I'm just looking at this from just a general sort of gambling perspective, in that it can be easy to be wrong about both kinds of narratives when you're looking at someone who's been very good in the short term, right? So yeah. Some people will say to themselves, well, no one can win four in a row. Well, that might technically be true in historically, but in a vacuum, anyone can win all the races in a row, right? So it doesn't preclude you from winning just because you've won in the past. Now, are you an underdog to win basically every race because there's just so many drivers and so many things can happen? Sure, this is probably why guys don't sustain long win streaks, right? Like, there's just a lot. Same thing kind of like for golf. It's very difficult to keep winning tournament after tournament simply because there's just a lot of other golfers and there's a lot of things that can happen, and it doesn't take much to not win. So to look at it, you can talk yourself into being correct about that, but for the wrong reasons, right? Like, so you can say, oh, he's won three in a row, no one wins four. Well, there's a reason no one wins four, and it's just not because it's just not going to happen for him this week. Now, the other way to look at it, which I like how you described, was just because he's won three, he could still win four. You know,
yeah.
if we didn't know about the previous three races, if you just looked at Kevin Harvick in a vacuum for this race, you might say to yourself, he's in a good spot to win this race because historically he's been a very good driver, and this track sets up fine for his skill set. So I think people can talk themselves into the wrong reasons behind narratives for situations like this. I think it's best, like your approach, to say, okay, we have this other information. It's good. He's a good driver. Good driver. A bad driver can't win three races in a row, right? I can't win three races in a row. So like, you have to be good to be able to do it. And therefore his good driving skills bring him into Sunday. So I just want to, without knowing, you know, beyond what you've explained to me, all the specifics behind what go into the NASCAR races, I just want to caution people about saying, coming up with reasons why something may or may not happen when they aren't necessarily correct. After Harvick, though, who are some other guys that we can maybe take a look at that you think that maybe, you know, can put themselves in a good chance to win, that maybe are somewhat of values for what this track presents them?
Yeah, before I jump into those other drivers, the one thing you can do with the data that we have and how hot Harvick's been, his price only went up a little bit, and if he shows a good qualifying and good practice speeds, something you can do, you know, when you start getting into GPP lineups, if you're making multiple lineups, is you can use that, because there is so much variance in NASCAR, just like golf. If you know that he's going to be 60% owned in GPPs, you may want to fade him in two or three lineups, because, I mean, anything can happen. A blown engine, blown tire, get in a wreck, whole bunch of things that can happen. Speeding penalties on pit road, any other kind of penalties on pit road. So playing with that variance and embracing that variance can really be a nice GPP strategy as well, in fading him and going with some other guys that are going to be, you know, same price range but less owned. So that's something that I look at once we see all the data and just kind of get a feel of kind of what percent owned he's going to be. And that's something I talk about on Sunday mornings when I do my live YouTube video. So, but yeah, into other drivers that I like, I talked about Kyle Larson. He's down at 10,000, so he's only the fifth most expensive this week. So just right off the bat, I think he's going to be pretty high owned. Probably him and Harvick are going to be the two highest owned, but for good reason. He's been the best Chevy this year. Chevys are in a new body style this year, the Camaro ZL1. So they've struggled a bit early on in the year. He has been the best of those. And then looking at some just prior data, he won the race here last year. He led 110 laps. And then looking at the two-mile tracks, which are Auto Club Speedway and Michigan. Michigan has two races every year. So he won the race here last year in Fontana. And then he won the two Michigan races last year. And he won the last Michigan race the year before. So that's four straight races on two-mile tracks. He's been absolutely dominant on these two-mile lower bank tracks. So I think he's definitely one that I'm looking at early on. And then just kind of going down the list, maybe in the mid-range, a guy that I like, again, with Stuart Haas Racing, Kevin Harvick's teammate, is Clint Bowyer at 8,000. He's usually a little bit lower owned than the other guys. This is his second year with Stuart Haas Racing, and he has one top five and two top tens, is averaging 40.8 DK points per race so far this year, so it's been a pretty good start. He's been up and down throughout his career here at Auto Club Speedway, but he does... he's coming off a third place finish here. So, I mean, there he has shown upside here at this track. So he's definitely one I'm going to be watching throughout practice and qualifying. And then a value play that I like kind of down in that punt range, I guess punt value at 6,000 is AJ Allmendinger. He's been pretty terrible since the Daytona 500 where he got a top 10. So I think he's going to be low-owned because of that. But he has a top 10 finish here in two of his last four races at Auto Club Speedway. So again, he fits the track profile, what he's shown some upside. But he's not your top-tier driver. But he has shown upside here. And if he's going to be, if he qualifies outside the top 20, which qualifying is really huge when you're talking guys under 8K, because you really don't want to have a guy that's maybe not going to get a top 10 who's starting inside the top 10. So if AJ Allmendinger starts outside the top 20, he's definitely at 6K is going to be a nice place differential value this week.
Interesting. So things to look at going forward into the weekend, we're going to take a look at qualifying. That happens on Saturday. You'll be posting some content that'll bring us up to speed. I know you you update your cheat sheet as we go. Yeah. We'll take a look at that. And then leading into Sunday, you'll have some more content going up with some maybe final pre-race thoughts. Do I have the schedule of that pretty much correct?
Yeah. So the big thing will be Saturday. I'll be updating right after qualifying for the Xfinity Series. We have about a 2-hour gap, so the gap is really small. So I update the cheat sheet quick with my top picks after qualifying for the Xfinity. And I'm going to be doing a live video this week on YouTube. I'll post the link on my Twitter in the DFSR chat room, in the article link. And then Sunday morning, Sunday after final practice in the afternoon, I will also be posting my top picks on the cheat sheet. There'll be a separate tab there for post-qualifying practice targets. And then Sunday morning, I tried this last week. It went over very well. I did about a 30-40 minute live YouTube video, just kind of going over my cheat sheet, top picks, why I like certain guys, looking at practice speeds, qualifying, and it went over really good. So I think I'm going to do it again here this week. Probably be about, we had a time change, so probably somewhere around 12 o'clock Eastern. And I will, again, I'll be posting that link all over the place as well.
Awesome stuff, man. Enjoy the races this weekend. Everyone can go over to dfsr.com and take a look at Chris's, the other content that he has going up for the race this weekend, the Auto Club 400. Go to our chat room. He'll be over there talking NASCAR before the races as well. All the stuff that you need to get yourself started for NASCAR, or if you've been at it for a while, just another resource to add to your repertoire. Buddy, enjoy the races this weekend. I'll talk to you soon.
Cheers.